Yes, sir.
Maxine explained to us that what has happened was that the Department of Trade and Industry put us out of M514. They normally meet in this room. And we meet in their room and they meeting in our room. So Aput went to the other side. They will bring that any minute to us. We have an apology. Let's deal with that later on. We will deal with a very simple agenda, straightforward agenda. Our agenda is going to be apologies, and then we will look at the bill itself, and we may not do it in this sequence. We also just need to share with each other the minutes of our last meeting, which was held on the 11th of August of the Select Committee. We also have to deal just with some announcements about our oversight for next week. And then we would like to use the opportunity as well to just give the members some feedback of the meeting that we attended this morning on the promotion and protection of investment talk. Can we hear if we are okay with that agenda? Is there anything else not to add on or follow?
Yes, thanks, Jay. I would just like to perhaps put under next week's oversight the challenges that might raise for myself under the launch as well as the week after, but we'll discuss it under that point.
Thank you. Okay. Lovely. Let us then hear if there's any apologies of from members. I have not received any. We need to discuss Honourable Finlayson's position. It's not a problematic position for me. In terms of the rules, the DA is meant to have two members in the committee, and you have two members, so it's not a problem. The EFF is supposed to have one member, but they send us two members, which is fine. So the rules are meant to guide us, where the rules are not saying that we can't be more, but it's difficulty when we are less. So at the moment we are more, and therefore I'm saying I have no problem with that. We will, however, note that as a standing apology, as we also know the standing apology for Honorable Zondi from KZN, who is still frail. So there's no other apologies other than those two standing apologies. Can I then also table to you an apology from the Deputy Minister, Llewellyn Landys, Honourable Llewellyn Landys, who is participating in Cabinet Committee meetings today? But that's for tomorrow. Why did you give it to me today? You said to me, it's not Landys. Oh, it's the Deputy Minister Shikonga, sorry. I had it confused now because you mentioned Landys too. Okay. We have the apology here from the Deputy Minister. We will also have an apology from the DG. And we have an advocate, Nosipho Sobhekwa, it's you. An advocate, Adam Mazumbuka, with you. He's the Chief Director of Legal Services. Now, we are informed that the two of them will attend this meeting on behalf of the Department of Transport. So we have a Chief Director. And your position, issue, Advocates of ECHO, as you will help us also then tell us what your position is, because you will be doing the presentation. Ashu. Your mic is not. Press the one next to you.
Thanks, everyone. Listen, advocate Masumbuka is actually en route here. He decided to take a morning flight today. He ought to have been here since yesterday, but for reasons beyond his control, he couldn't. I now understand that he's on his way here. He should be here anytime. Yes,
thank you very much. We also have with us, can I ask you to please introduce yourself to the rest of the members?
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Advocate Rhoda. I'm Parliamentary Legal Advisor. So I followed this bill from the moment it was introduced into Parliament and advised on taking advice the Portfolio Committee on Transport, and now it's landed on this committee. So I'm the Parliamentary Legal Advisor.
Thank you very much. As was said in the meeting that we attended this morning, it makes us feel comfortable when we know the Parliamentary Legal Advisor team is not only with us, but that they have also done the legal work in terms of the document that comes to us today. We have members of staff who are with us, as well as the members from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group. Can we then go into the presentation of the bill? Allow me to just preempt it and state for the record that what had happened was that we had a presentation already, a PowerPoint presentation on the bill. We were under pressure during that session from Honorable Faber that we must just accept, and we indicated that the protocols are that we cannot do that. We are advised by the Secretary of the Committee that we have to go through it clause by clause before we can refer it to the NCOP for acceptance. Can I then give over to you, Advocate Sambu? Sorry, I'm getting the names confused now. Advocate Sambu, back one. Can he be in? No. He's not on my list. Okay. No. Aren't you going to do it? Isn't that one you're here? That's why I asked earlier on whether you're not going to do a PowerPoint presentation. Let's hear maybe the advocate at the back of
the Thank you, Chairperson. My understanding is that a committee was going to be dealing with the bill today and considering it clause by clause. That was what was on the agenda. But if I could just assist the committee for brevity, there's no legal requirement for the committee to consider the bill clause by clause. There's not even a consent. There's no such requirement in the rules either. That's just for the committee's own edification to be sure that it has considered everything. The committees or other committees in the past, in the NCLP and the NA, have gone through page by page and requested each of the members then, in case they have any additions or considerations that they would like to put before the committee on a particular clause, then they're allowed to do so per page. So if the committee, if the chairperson would then like to proceed in that manner, that is legally acceptable, and the committee is in no way the prejudiced for not having considered the bill properly.
Thank you very much. I have a document that has been prepared for us here. Let me just see. Yeah. The merchant shipping law. We have a document here, and I will then speak to this document. I wonder, has it been shared? I just want to check if it's been shared with anybody. Yeah. It's been shared by all of us. It's a document from Zibile Nisha, who is our researcher. Zibile, you are here now?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. So we'll use, I looked at the document, and it's a very good summary. If it's okay with you, Advocate Mekhi, that we pay the auction and deal with it. What has happened is that our researcher, who was part of the last conversation, then went back, gave us a summary of the document. And the first point that he's raising is the background, where he's saying that the Merchant Shipping Bill has been initiated as a response in compliance to the Maritime Labor Convention of 2006. And the latter convention was adopted at the General Conference of the ILO. Remember, we had the big conversation about the protection that this bill is providing to people working on the merchant ships. And South Africa is a signatory to the ILO. And this is also in line with existing international maritime labor conventions. And these other maritime labor conventions seeks to provide protection to seafarers. I'm going to come back to that word later on. Seafarers in shipping industry and ensure good working conditions in terms of the ILO regulations. Now the conventions that this merchant shipping bill builds further on is the Forced Labor Convention of 1930, the Freedom of Association and Protection of the Right to Organize Convention of 1948, the Right to Organize and Collective Bargaining Convention of 1949. I know Honorable Ont was there when they adopted that one in 1949. Can you remember who was part of the Equal Remuneration Convention of 1951, the Abolition of Forced Labor Convention of 1957, the Discrimination, Employment and Occupation Convention of 1958, the Minimum Age Convention of 1973. Remember the conversation that we had about what is a child under the circumstances? So it looks at the protection of children as seafarers as well. And the Work Forms of Child Labor Convention of 1999. Those are the conventions. The Merchant Shipping Amendment Bill of 2015 is also expected in terms of Article 3 of the Maritime Labor Convention of 2006 to ensure that South Africa safeguards and regulates the following fundamental rights. Firstly, the right to freedom of association and the effective recognition of the right to collective bargaining. Secondly, the elimination of all forms of compulsory labor, of all forms of force of compulsory labor. Thirdly, the effective abolition of child labor. And then finally, the elimination of discrimination in the respect of employment and occupation. Again, the Merchant Shipping Bill of 2005 is responding to Article 4 by ensuring that this piece of legislation takes into account the seafarers' employment and social rights, which provides, firstly, every seafarer has the right to a safe and secure workplace that complies with safety standards. Secondly, seafarers have a right to fair terms of employment. Thirdly, every seafarer has a right to decent working and labor conditions on board ship. And then finally, seafarers have a right to health protection, medical care, welfare measures, and other forms of social protection. If you will allow me, I will go on for another 5 minutes and then we'll break for to get our tea. So don't be anxious about the tea, yeah. In terms of Article 31, of the Maritime Labor Convention 2006, each South African as member state, each South African, because South Africa is a member state to the convention, shall adopt laws, regulations, and other measures containing the following. That means that's what South Africa ought to do. Honorable Kogula, are you with us? My brother, you're with us. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, let me mention the laws that needs to be adopted in the regulations. Is the prevention of occupational accidents, occupational diseases and work, related risk on board fishing vessels, including risk evaluation and management, training and onboard instruction of fishers. Secondly, training for fishers in the handling of type of fishing gear they will use and in the knowledge of the fishing operations in which they will be engaged. You can't go unprotected and go fish for marlin, because that marlin, when it can get onto that boat, will kill. So this legislation is intended to also make sure that the fisher women and men are adequately protected for the type of fishing that they are engaging. Then the obligations of fishing vessel owners, fishers and others concerned, due account being taken of the safety and health of fishers under the age of 18. Now, that's what the law says. It mentions under the age of 18. Because the law actually says you cannot become engaged in fishing under the age of 18. It doesn't say over the age of 18. You can be involved. You cannot under the age of 18. The reporting, the next point is the reporting and investigations of accidents on board fishing vessels flying the South African flag or any other flag. Because what it does then is that somewhere in the amendment we are talking about the responsibility that rests with the owner of the fishing vessel, but also the responsibility that rests with the country in which that vessel is registered. And then the final point is the setting up of joint committees on occupational safety and health, or after consultation of other appropriate bodies. It is in this context that the Merchant Shipping Bill has been developed to comply with all the above-mentioned standards, and therefore the purpose of this brief is to summarize and analyze on how well does this amendment bill respond to international conventions highlighted above. Now, I'm going to come to the lawyers. The advice that we got from you as our legal advisors is that indeed this bill conforms to the international conventions, and therefore you have no problem with us referring it. Can we just get your response on that?
That's the affirmative.
Thank you, Dr. Person. I can indeed confirm that the board does conform with the international obligations as set out in the convention.
Thank you very much. Can I hear from the members on the introduction? Are there any further questions that we have? Honourable Faber?
Chair, we actually agree with this and with the whole bill as a total. So from Honourable Lant and my side, we went through it thoroughly. With our research, etc., and so the whole bill as is. We can go through clause by clause after this, but as far as we're concerned, we don't see any problem with it. I specifically went into the section where it was about night, which explained quite thoroughly that after 12 o'clock at night for a term of 9 hours, and then the overtime, we looked at that. Previously, just asked a question on the IOL, International Labour Organization, what their stance are, and if it was in line, but it was said by you just now that it is in line with international labour practice. So, it is just a few name changes, if I can say that. So we don't have a problem with it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Any other members? Honourable Wouter?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, all of you. Assalamu alaikum. Just to get, if we could just interrogate very briefly the issue of the children and under 18 and over 18, just to give us a little more explanation, perhaps from the legal side, just to say we're adequately covered, just because, you know, we did discuss it last time, and I just want a little bit more clarity on that. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Can we have the legal advisors just note it? We'll come back to you before we have a break now. Any other members? Can I just comment, Honourable Father, on that point that you're making about night? That we also said that night will differ depending on where you are in the ocean. Therefore, they didn't put a specific time to it, but rather, yeah. Can we hear from any two of our legal advisors? Just elaborate for us further on the definition of a fact.
Listen, I'm just trying to find a particular section, but my understanding is that the bill uses the terminology young person. So a young person is someone over the age of 16. So these people are engaged in apprenticeships, training, etc. on the ships. And this bill, then what it does is it brings those protections that ordinarily young people would not have on the ship. Brings those protections in to cover them. So it's not children per se in the sense of the African legal sense, children, but it's more young person. I don't know if that makes it at all clear for the member, or does he want, could it have a particular definition in this bill for a young person?
I think it's that age thing of 16 that is a concern from what Honourable Vauda. And the way I understand it, you need to correct me. Where you're saying a person aged over 16, younger than 18, can be on a ship, provided that they are doing an apprenticeship. They cannot work on the ship full-time unless they are old 18.
Yes, that's true, sir.
Does that answer you?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I answered, but I'm concerned. I feel that, even for apprenticeship, I'm not convinced that children or that youngsters under the age of 18 should be on that ship. I feel that it should be, you know, 18 and over, even for an apprenticeship.
Yeah, Honourable Barber is quite right, you see, that we're dealing with a particular reality here. Even if you look at other forms of labour, you see, but with shipping is more of a specialised thing. Your father is a skipper, you live in an area where the only employment that you can get access to is shipping, because you're living in a shipping village. And therefore, what the legislation is trying to do is to say that, look, this child would inevitably work on a ship, anyhow, or the young person. So let's look at how do we give protection to the young person by saying that you can do your apprenticeship, you can learn the ropes, you can skill yourself, but you are only employable on that ship when you are over 18 years, depending on how you look at it. It's not to fill a gap and say that, no, now you can take young people and employ them. Because apprenticeship is not considered employment. But the reality is, what do you do with a young person who comes 16 years of age and wants and have no choice but to work on a ship? So the bill actually does provide protection. But before you come in again, let's just get an opinion here. Yeah, maybe it's different from mine, and then come back to you.
Yes, thanks, sir. What you're saying gives a full reflection of what the bill earlier says. Also, for the context of this legislation, we should be careful not to give a strict interpretation. When you are 16 and younger, you are deemed to be a child. You are not in a position where you can be able to differentiate the terms between what is wrong and what is right. Now, the bill is saying
the child is between 16 and 18, it seeks to strike a balance. Because at times you might have a situation where a person, a younger person, is doing something else full time, but also is part of an apprenticeship. Meaning that we are careful not to exclude a child who is above 16 but below 18. To trust them that that person is able to make a determination to say immediately, post to the 18 age, would say, this is something that I would love to venture into on full time basis. So the basics to strike a balance, till certain this person is able to make a determination. Thanks, sir.
Honorable Vauda, and then I have Honorable Jimunya after you, and then Honorable Nita.
Yes, thank you, sir. I understand fully where we're coming from, where we want to go, but my biggest concern is not this. My biggest concern is that we are leaving a loophole, and that loophole is going to be exploited by people that do not have the same model, you know, the moral standards that we would like to see them have. And the problem I have is that anybody that is on a ship for an apprenticeship, that would include tasks of labor, and people without conscience will definitely then take more apprentices on board to do the labor that they want to get out of this, and this is where my concern is, I think. Thank you, sir.
Can I maybe get an opinion again on this one? This age of employment vis-a-vis the other labor relations regime of the county, are they applicable in tandem with this particular piece of legislation or not?
Okay, just note that one, please. Honourable Leader.
Thank you very much, sir. I think my point is covered, but I wanted to check exactly that.
Okay. That's over better. Can we have a legal response on that?
Thank you, Chairperson. Indeed, the default is in line with Africa's labor regime. If the members would like to take, the members have a copy of the bill before them. On page 24 of the bill, it deals with the minimum age in terms of the convention. And then it says that minimum age for work is 16 in terms of the convention. That's been changed slightly in the shipping bill, and that
was sorry, just refer us to the paragraph on
24, paragraph 20, or line 20, I should say. The minimum age for work has been dealt with, says that the minimum age for work is 16. So internationally, they accept that this is the age that young persons will be able to work on the shop. The difference is we then say that age is for vocational training only, i.e. apprenticeship. So it is in line with our labor relations regime, and I think there are certain there's recourse, because the master of ship is then ultimately responsible, and recourse can then be taken against him or her should any infringement happen in terms of that vocational training for that young person, whether it may be he's engaged in labor in exceeding the hours that he or she or that young person is allowed to do, or the work that young person is allowed to do in terms of a vocational training. So there is recourse for that young person. Obviously, the reality is that someone will attempt to take advantage of a young person, but there is recourse available
in terms of the labor regime.
Brilliant.
So it will differ from country to country. However, the bill is there.
Yes, sir. Just to add on one more thing. In a context, you know, when it comes to labor relations and all this, we have to be very, very careful. Because the first thing that we do upon being the signatory convention is to make sure that there are no provisions in the convention that might undermine our own domestic legislation. And also, Chair, on this one, the bus stops with the master of the ship. he is vested with the responsibility of making sure that there is no transgression, none whatsoever, on the ship. As my colleague said earlier on, that at times there would be those who would want to exploit the situation, but their responsibility, the buck stops with the master of the ship. It's his own state of affairs. He's the one with the responsibility of making sure that the ship that he is steering is in compliance with our regulations and all pieces of regulation that are relevant. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Can we, on that note, just give ourselves an opportunity? Some of us have been in meetings since 8 o'clock, half past eight this morning, to grab something and return to our tables and have it at our tables while we continue with the meeting. So we'll take just a 5 minutes recess. With your permission. Thanks very much.
I'm a nice one, that's it, I'll make it work, hello.
Thank you.
Are we ready to continue? I think we're all here. Let's just keep on about Vauda. You know, when it's fasting, it is much better.
You missed me when I'm not
okay. Thank you very much, colleague. Having listened to your comments and having agreed that we'll end by 12, I will run quickly through the clause. Clause 1 of the bill seeks to amend Section 2 of the Act. And Section 2 of the Act contains the definitions which guide the interpretation of the various provisions of the Act. Then we jump and we look at the definition seafarer, which is now replacing the expression of apprentice officer. And that will necessitate in the Act the deletion of a number of clauses. And we've gone through them the last time. The significance of that is actually, Honorable Kaula, that in the Act there was a word used, apprentice officer. So that will no longer be used. The word seafarer could now be used.
Yes, I remember that there was a question for one of the members who had asked for that.
Yeah.
And we did try to clarify as to why the word seafarer. But I felt that there was something that I might have left when I gave that explanation.
Okay.
This one, to strike a good balance between both genders. Okay? Because the words that we used before, apprenticeship and seamen, were gender based. So this one is now used because it's neutral and it strikes a good balance between those of masculine gender and those of feminine gender.
Thank you very much. Then we jump to clause 7 of the bill. I'm just going to raise those that had some discussion in the last meeting. The others we accept generally. Clause 7 of the bill seeks to amend section 102 of the Act by, as have been said by our legal advisor earlier on, by imposing a duty on the master of a ship to enter into an agreement with a seafarer on behalf of the employer, irrespective of the size of the ship or tonnage that the ship carries. So there's no more big ships and small ships. No. We thought it was a small ship, and therefore we wanted to employ this person, or we apply different regulations to it. Master of
the ship. Now, can we ask you to just help us understand the difference between the master of the ship and what they call, yeah, the owner? No, sorry, the employer. That's the word I'm looking for.
The master?
And the employer.
And the employer. The master of the ship is the one who is in complete control of the ship, meaning steering it. And automatically, there are powers vested on him, together with specific responsibilities. I would perhaps say the word, he is the CEO of the ship. The boss talks with him.
Mm-hmm.
The employer could be somebody else. Remember, the master is the one who is physically driving the ship, steering the ship. The employer is sitting elsewhere in the world.
In a air conditioned
office.
But not an office. Sorry, continue.
Thank you. I'd like to take this opportunity to apologize for coming late. But the difference between the master and the employer is that the master is also an employee of the owner of the ship. In fact, the egg is not doing the weight employer, it's doing the weight owner of the ship. It's like when you are purchasing a car, the owner can be the bank, but you, the person who purchases the car, you are the legal possessor of the particular vehicle. Therefore, the master is in command of the ship. And just because the owner is not available when the ship is in the sea, therefore the master is carrying the total responsibility, the commander in charge. And the reason why we come up with this particular plan, we didn't want to discriminate against seafarers of bigger fish, ships and seafarers of lesser cross of the ships.
Thank you. Just my lay person's understanding of that is as well. You have the ship. The ship goes out to sea. The seafarers are stranded. The master of the ship jumps up and leaves them there. He says, it's not my responsibility. In terms of this, it cannot happen. The master of the ship is responsible for everybody who is working on that ship. So it's a way of protecting.
Yes, each profession is guided by its professional ethics, and in terms of this industry, the master is the last person to jump out because he's got the ultimate control. He's representing the owner of the ship. So he must make sure that the people who are in the ship, all of them, are safe before he can think of him jumping out. But I don't think there is a thing of jumping out because we are trained and we are understanding the ethics of the profession.
I agree with you, but we've seen what has happened in Italy.
Well, the situation dictates, but the ethical position is he should be the last person to can decide otherwise and leave other people aside.
So you will be driven to look at what the legislation is trying to do. The legislation is trying to hold the master accountable.
Kevin, if I could just simplify it a little bit more. the term master comes from maritime law. So in terms of, essentially the master is the captain of the ship. So the owner of the ship, if you can take it back a few centuries, the owner of the ship or the employer would be the king of Spain, for example, where the captain of the ship would be the master of the ship, and he'd be sailing between Spain and South America, dealing with the balloon or whatever. And then the owner or the employee would be the king of Spain. So they're two completely different people. They can be the same person, but in this example, that's how to let the maritime law.
The point that I'm trying to emphasize with the members here is that indeed this bill looks at providing adequate protection for the seafarers. Let's go to clause 8 of the bill. It amends section 110 of the Act prohibiting the master or owner of a South African ship to employ children under the age of 16. So clause 8 deals then specifically with the owner
of the South African Charter. Clause 9 proposes an amendment to Section 11 of the Act by prohibiting the owner or master of a ship to employ a young person to work at night unless it is part of their training. The clause also seeks to remove the limitation that a young person may only be employed as a trimmer or fire man. Honourable Father.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry for interrupting you. I just also thought that they changed the one on clause 8. They changed the one taken from South Africa to the Republic. And I would just like to know what the specific reason is why they didn't just use the word South Africa again when it's instead of Republic. Sorry, it says, but not interested in the Republic. And I mean, to me, Republic and South Africa is exactly the same. So I don't know why it is changed. I just like two interesting things.
I think it's a technical thing that we refer to South Africa as the Republic of South Africa. So what has happened there is that instead of repeating the whole thing, is to say the Republic, because it's a law of the Republic of South Africa. If you look at any pieces of our legislation, we don't refer to South Africa. We refer to the Republic of South Africa. Okay, clause 40. Opinion?
In fact, the interpretation of the regime is correct. He is spot on.
I was a lawyer before I became a chair. let's run and look at clause 14, which amends section 21 by imposing a duty on the master or owner of a South African ship to furnish a seafarer with a monthly account on his or her wages. So we're basically talking about the business. Clause 15 of the bill amends section 130, and that refers to an advisory board on the Social Development Act of 2001 instead of the National Welfare Act, which is outdated now. Clause 18 proposes the insertion of a new section 158 in the Act, and that deals particularly with complaints by seafarers individually and not necessarily collectively only. Individual seafarers can lodge complaints that need to be taken seriously. Clause 27 then deals with references to the two conventions, namely the MLC of 2006 and also C-188. There are also proposals for consequential amendments of the nature referred to in paragraph 2.2. Does that make sense to us? Clause 28, which is the final one, seeks to amend section 356 of the Act. The amendment seeks to provide that the two conventions, namely the MLC and the C-88, will have the force of law in the Republic from the date on which the bill, if promulgated, will take effect. And I'm saying if promulgated here purely for technical reasons. And that is it, colleagues. We're talking here about the Merchant Shipping Amendment Bill of 215 and it's bill 12, so 2015. Can I give a final opportunity for anyone who wants to make further comments to do so now? I don't see any, in which case I want to request you that you allow me to report on behalf of the Select Committee on Economic and Business Development on the Merchant Shipping Bill B12/15 dated 1st September 2015, saying to the NCLP
that the Select Committee on Economic and Business Development, having considered the Merchant Shipping Amendment Bill referred to it, report that it has agreed to go. Is that what you said? Okay. We have, as a Select Committee, agreed to the bill. And we refer it to the NCLP. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, colleague. I will find this then on your behalf. Thank you very much to the team from the Department of Transport, to the team from the Parliamentary Legal representative of the Parliamentary Legal Team also for being here. We appreciate that very much. We have two matters of business that we need to go through, so we're leaving it up to you. You can decide whether you stay or whether you recuse yourself. Thank you very much for coming. It's 09. You are in debt. Colleagues, let's look at the minutes first of the last meeting. Just two items. We're going to look at the minutes and we're going to have a quick conversation about the minutes is a meeting by the briefing by the Department of Transport on the Merchant Shipping Bill, which is done now, which makes it very easy. The meeting was held on the 11th of August 2015. We at present, Honorable Reza, Mtimunye, Mtere, Honorable Dikale, Honorable Papa, Honorable Lon, Honorable Kaula, and Honorable Baba. Because you are a alternative. We just had the conversation early on, which I think is important also for Honorable Bauda to hear, that my reading of the laws is that we need to have two members of the DA, one member from the EFF. If we have more than that, we have no problem. We're actually not done. So the advantage is that we also have Honorable Kabula as an alternate member to whoever. If we don't, we welcome that. You don't? Okay. I'm not sure if that... Oh, okay, okay. That's helpful. That's helpful on the lot. Okay. Then, honorable members, we had the staff present. Point one was where we received the report. Where we looked at business of the day. Point two was the presentation that we went through. Point 2.1 was the deliberations that we had. Can I just read to you the deliberation because it was some time? The committee welcomed the presentation. One of the members raised the need to include the National House of Traditional Religious Leaders during legislation development. The department emphasized that the bill does not necessarily affect the provinces, and furthermore, it does not contain provisions pertaining to customary law, customs of traditional communities. Members also emphasized the need for legislation to be crafted in a more simplified manner. The committee further recognized the importance of aligning the Act with the provisions of the MLC and C188. We appreciated that alignment. Members acknowledged the work of the ILO, which aims at promoting rights at work, encouraging decent employment opportunities, and enhance social cohesion. We adopted the minutes of the last meeting, and the closing remarks was just that we will deliberate on this bill today, which we have not done. Can I get any amendments?
I move to adopt it, please.
Honorable Power moves that we adopt it. Seconded by Honorable Mehta. Thank you very much. Thank you, colleagues. Colleagues, the people working on the ATC are messing around a little bit. I just thought that I should let you know that on the list of today, if you look at the program, the NDOP program for today, they have there under other business, agreement, and also the shipping amendment bill. Now, my responsibility as the chairperson of the NDP, as I arranged with EDC, that I will just read the statement to the meeting. There won't be a debate on that. But it's not happening today, just before you come. It's not happening today, because that is just stated under other business. If any is stated under other business, it's not the business of today. So we will most probably have to deal with it tomorrow. It's in the office of the chief to tell us when that is on the program. But there was a meeting of the programming committee. Did the programming committee meet this morning on the website? Yeah, so I just want to alert you that it is agreement. We have general agreement on that. And on the other bill on shipping, we have had that conversation and agreement on that one. So I will just read the statement. No, the taking. What did they do? On the merchant shipping. Section 75. Okay. Final point, if that's okay with you. The oversight. Martins have arranged for us to fly to Richards Bay on Monday afternoon. He did send the emails to all of us. And I would assume that we have all dealt with him directly in terms of our travel plans. So we're not going to discuss the travel plans. Honorable Barber indicated earlier that there were some difficulties with him and Honorable Lund. I think that's what you want to raise now.
Chairperson, yes. From my perspective, Honorable Lund can speak for himself, but from my perspective, I have to then be able to fly from Kimberley to Johannesburg. Now, if I look at the only slot that goes out, if I get to Johannesburg on Monday, there's no flight direct again to Richards Bay. This is the first challenge that I have. So I'll have to fly to Umhlanga, wherever the Durban airport is, which is Durban, which will then be inconvenient because the committee will have to send the vehicle to come and pick me up there just for the night. The second problem is then I'll be there on Tuesday. The first problem is Monday is my constituency day, and I've already arranged long beforehand meetings for the afternoon, Monday afternoon, so that I can fly back to Cape Town on Monday evening, because as you know, typically don't have a lot of flights. So this is the first problem. That means that I will effectively only be able to go to Richards Bay on Tuesday. On Wednesday, I have to be back here in Cape Town. We've also invited UJ at the farewell dinner of the Parliamentary Rugby Club and U.S. Chairperson also of International Relations. The Deputy President will, we're having a function with him and the 1995 box, etc. And for our farewell, we're going to the Parliamentary World Cup as from Thursday. So on Wednesday afternoon, I think it's 5-6 o'clock, we did put in an invitation to your office. I don't know if you received this from our secretary from the parliamentary rugby team. So that means that from Wednesday afternoon, I have to be here in any case. So for me to on Tuesday fly to Richards Bay and eventually get there like 11 o'clock and to fly back on the Wednesday morning, I just think, to be quite honest, it's going to be a waste of public funding, which I don't want to do. So this is just that I put forward to you. If you say that you think I have to be there on the Tuesday evening, just by getting there on the Tuesday and coming back on the Wednesday morning, I will abide by that, but I don't think it should be great.
Thank you, Honorable Papa. Can we just, at the opportune moment, get any indication of who will be there? Because we want to have five provinces there, I think.
Yeah, I will make sure there's a full Tuesday, and then I'm giving my team some suggestions on the flights. I maybe even do the half of the Wednesday, but for now, full Tuesday, half of the Wednesday.
That'll be a thing as well.
I can't understand why you're there.
Yes, yes, I am the person in the World Cup team. I'm the one that actually can play. He says he must just say what he can play. There's a difference. It's like a chair and an electric chair. There's a bit of a difference.
We all got the message. Okay, let's go further than that. Matthias is trying to give me a signature that signed at the back. But let's hear on Bonita and then go to Matthias.
Thank you very much, Chef. I have already responded to Matthias today. Also, my mind is blocked. I will be able to be there from Tuesday.
What time on Tuesday?
I will be sleeping over in Devon. So that I'm at least on Tuesday.
And
I can't be having work on Monday.
And you, Honorable Lund? We're not working on Monday, so don't. Honorable Lund, when could you be there on Tuesday? You'll be there Monday evening. Martins, also, Honorable Kaula, are you going to bless us with your presence as well? Martins, do two things. Tell us who has confirmed with you, and then also answer the thing about the time that Honorable Mita would be able to join us.
Sir, thank you for the opportunity. We have 8 members at the moment, and if Mr. Favre and Mr. Lund won't be part of that, we will have only 6 because we have a policy from Lingen. I already have indicated on my signing service Mr. Kuhu is not available, and Mr. Mkwena will come back to me with the answer. As Mr. Kuhula is saying, he's under negotiations with me around if he's going to go. Unfortunately, Chair, I need to submit my financials by today. And the Honourable Mayor indicated to me that this morning he will give me an answer. So I already gave an indication, but I have to wait on him now. And I told him to delay the process. At the moment, we have 10 members. If the 2 DA members is not going there, that's the situation around it.
That if the 2 members from Western Cape and Northern Cape are not gone, we represent our provinces. So we think, so we're fine.
Okay,
so Honorable Lund, thank you very much.
Sorry,
I think in terms of your situation, we would appreciate, particularly because of the arrangements of Honorable Father, that Honorable Father then don't need to come. And then it would be lovely if we could have you there for Tuesday and half of Wednesday. Full Tuesday. Okay. We understand your situation. And you will talk with Mati. Can I just give you a portent? The program is not finalized yet, but we will be sleeping in St. Lucia on Monday. We'll be sleeping at Sea Sand Hotel. In which area is that?
In
Richards Bay. Yeah.
St. Lucia, Sea Sand is in St. Lucia, so it's close to the, it's a lot, it's not the hotel here. It's the tourism side, the wetlands area.
Where okay. Colleagues, on that lodge thing, I'm gonna get somebody for you to tickle you. What had happened was that I spoke to the secretary of the NCOP because there's this myth that members of parliament must sleep in 5-star hotels. And I said, no. We also deal with tourism. If there's a tourism site that we're gonna visit and we sleep at one place and go to a tourism site, all that we want is we want a comfortable space where we will also be safe. as long as it is safe and comfortable. So the drink that we therefore have now is safe and it is comfortable and we are okay. The secretary of the NCOP said that no, there's no such rule that we have to stay in five-star. Members of parliament want it. And therefore, the administrators would do it because they don't want to be attacked by members of parliament. So thanks, Martin, for arranging that. Then we will have our meeting Tuesday. Our first meeting is at 8:30 with East Mangaliso Wetlands Park Authority Management, KZN and Tourism Board, the Provincial Department of Economic Development, and Tourism and Environmental Affairs. You know how the provincial structures are structured. And we will look at the current and future business prospects of this park. Now, when Lupeka mentioned this park for me, he thinks that it's a game park. It's not a game park. It's wetlands. Right. World Heritage Wetlands site. Right. It's not a game park. It's different from Pilanza. And then we will ascertain the extent to which an environment for new entrants from the previously disadvantaged communities into the tourism and conservation areas is allowed. Then we will do that for the whole day. The advice that we got from the manager of the park is that it is better to go into the park later in the day than during daytime. So he is still working with the office, the secretaries in the office, as to exactly what time do we go to the park.
The manager proposed that we go to the park on Monday night.
Oh, Monday.
Monday night is the best day to do the sightseeing, to drive around the park.
Now, who will miss out on Monday night? Honorable Lon is going to be there. Will he be there in time, Marty?
If we're going to do it Monday night, we need to keep in account here that we will leave from Johannesburg at 5 to 5, arriving in Richards Bay at 10 past 6, meaning that we have a 77 case we have to do to St. Lucia. So, depends if there's luck or whatsoever on the road, but normally it's dark on that side of the area, so we might do around 20 minutes. So if we add that, we should be around about 8, close to 8 o'clock at that destination. So I don't know, sir.
Okay, we hear that. We're not going to try and make the decision now. Let them negotiate that. On Wednesday, Honorable Lon, we will then eat where we have left, which will most probably be at the Burkia Hotel on the waterfront. We will then have a meeting with Utungulu District Municipality on the regional economy, investment and employment opportunities and challenges within the district. And we will have that at the offices of the Utungulu District Municipality. We will then have lunch, and after lunch we will do a site visit. Now, the office gave me a list of 5 projects. I fortunately sat with a member who comes from this area, who recommended that what we do is that we visit the following 2 projects of the Department of Public Works. The one is Widowed Women of South Africa, where there's a lot of widowed women that are involved in a development project funded by the Extended Public Works Program. The second one is that we look at environmental awareness and litter, which is a very interesting project. And we'll just do those 2 projects from 2 o'clock until 5 o'clock. And then the Thursday, we will have a meeting. This is the important one that Honorable Lont is going to miss on Thursday. The meeting with the Richards Bay Port Management. Now, we unfortunately can't change this because they've already negotiated. We will look at the Richards Bay Port expansion and other logistic nodes for development project in the province, and we'll go on a site visit
to the Richards Bay port, something similar to what we did when we were at Newark. And then that's all in the morning. In the afternoon, we will visit another project, which is a project of the Melma SAPS, South Africa Police Services, which is an EWP Youth Service Employment Project. I don't know what exactly they do. Is it theft training people in prison, or do they take us to people that have been rehabilitated that is running projects in Memo? Then, colleagues, very importantly, on Thursday night, we then move from that part of the country to Delhi, where we sleep in Elangeni, so that we are there on the Friday morning already to then visit the Durban Port Management. We'll then do a visit to the Durban Port Expansion and the Durban Dig-Out Port. And our emphasis there is going to be on maritime transport in relation to cost, efficiency, and security. We've done all these shipping boats, right? So now we're going to do that. And we'll do a site visit of the port. We intend leaving at 1 o'clock. Members, I'm going to make an honest appeal to you. Can we not take flights before the site visit is over? Right. You can go to your rural village on the site visit is over. Martin, what is the license for Friday? Between 3 and 5, so we say. Okay. So we're flying from Durban. The reason why we are not flying from Cape Town to Durban, but flying from here directly, is purely on the safety element, that we want people to arrive safely at the airport closest to the destination, because we know that air continues to be the safest mode of transport. We are meeting tomorrow, normal time, 10 o'clock, to look at Agenda 2063. Are we okay that we adjourn on that note? Thank you very much.